Hey, everybody. My name is Mitzi, and I'm an alcoholic. Yep, cannot wait. I usually say I don't want to be anywhere else doing anything with anybody else, and I do love being with you folks in this room. I don't necessarily like this part of it, but I do it because that's what y'all told me to do in here. And I'm going to do the best I can tonight, and I'm probably going to squall. And I know y'all love me anyway. And thank you, Joe. Well, thank you for your words. I'm not thanking you for asking me yet. So we'll get there. We'll get there. My name is Mitzi, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June the 23rd of 2001. And for that, I truly am as grateful as I know how to be. And I can tell you there's been times in this program that I wasn't very, very grateful for it. That I had an attitude of, why me? And I finally think I've grown out of that in here. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. Wow, what an awesome deal. What an awesome deal to be able to come and sit with a lot of friggin' people and hear the things that we hear in here and watch people. I sponsor Casey and you know, just to watch the miracles happen in this program. And I'm going to get over this in a minute. But you know, this is an awesome deal, y'all. And if you're here tonight and you don't think it's very awesome, just keep coming back. Because it'll come. It's not always awesome. Life happens in here. Life has definitely happened to me in this program. I got here fairly young. And I've grown up in here. I've grown up in this fellowship, and I've been through a lot of firsts in this fellowship. But before I really get started on my story, Jay. So I'm mad at Jay and I'm mad at Joe. But Jay asked me a year and a half ago. He came down to Ruston and he came up to me and he said, I want you to come to South Carolina. I said, I was there 6 years ago with Mike. Mike is my husband that read the traditions. And I said, I didn't necessarily know he meant he wanted me to speak. You know, I just thought he wanted me to come visit. He's like, no, I want you to speak. And I said to him, he had just been diagnosed, and I said, as long as you're there, I'll be there. And he said, I'll do my best. And what I know tonight is he did do his best, and what I also know tonight is Jay is here. And he is here in spirit, and he's here in Lisa and Randy and all those folks that are carrying this on. And I totally understand just filling in the cracks. Ruston is my home group where Joe and Glenda are, and you know they've been the Jays of our Ruston group and of our Ruston convention and I don't know what we would do without them. And if those of you here, it's going to be okay, but yeah, it's going to take some time. Those are some big huge shoes to fill, and I spent time with Jay in July. At the end of July, Jay came down to Gonzales and told his story. And we had a blast, in Gonzales. And I knew he wasn't doing well. And it was a great time. If you know Jay, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't know him, I'm sorry you missed out on that, because to know him was to laugh and have a good time. And he did not mind telling you what he thought. So as is most folks in here. So anyway, I know he is here. I know he is here. And I am grateful that he thought enough to ask me to come here. So with that, I'll try to stop squalling and move on. But anyway, I am here to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I grew up in I'm the youngest of four children. My sister is 8 years older than me, and so in a lot of ways, I grew up as kind of the baby of the family. And if you're the baby of the family, I don't have to tell you anything else. You know what that means. you are the center of the world. At least you think you are, anyway. And that's pretty much what I thought. And from a very early age, I truly can remember always wanting more. For as long as I can remember, I always wanted more of whatever it was that made me feel good. And from one of the first things that I wanted more of was food. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous, and I won't give you a lot of information about all my issues, but I will tell you that that's played a huge role in my life. And I can tell you that the first thing that I remember, you know, as I was going back through my inventory, and, you know, we go through a lot of the things we've done and what we've stolen, and the first thing I can remember stealing as a child was in kindergarten. We had, I guess we all brought like our snack of the day in, and I don't know what I brought, but I guess I didn't want it. And Jonathan's sucker was in there. And I got his sucker out of the box when snack time came, and they kept looking for the sucker, and I had the sucker. And I ate the sucker, and it was good. And so I always wanted what somebody else had, or I always wanted mine and somebody else's, you know. And that's pretty much, I could sit down now, and that's my story. I just want more of anything that makes me feel good. I grew up in what I know today is an alcoholic home, you know, and the adult child of an alcoholic, if you want to phrase it that way. My dad was a very kind man. Reminds me of Joe in a lot of ways. You know, I often think of what it would have been like if my daddy could have found this fellowship, or if would have been willing to walk in these rooms. He was very kind, and but he loved to drink, and he loved to get drunk, and my mother hated it. And so you know, when I came here, you know, some people come in with, you know, well, resentments against their dad. I didn't have that. What I had was this raging Al-Anon, unrecovered, untreated Al-Anon mom who was just screaming all the time, screaming, and I had this dad that in, you know, the eyes of a child and the eyes of a little girl whose daddy, you know, I mean, I thought he hung the moon. I had all this resentment against this mom who, all in my opinion, all she did was scream all the time. And as we know today, once I got here, I know she had a tornado roaring through her life. She was just trying to control a tornado, which tornadoes are uncontrollable. For as long as, until I was about 8 years old, what I remember, and I'll just give you a few examples. I won't go into the deep, dark horrors of it, but it was just very chaotic. And there was a lot of screaming that went on. And my mom worked, and my dad worked sometimes. And when she worked, he would go down to the road to so-and-so's house, and at some point during the night, either somebody would have to drive him home or he'd try to drive home. And we live, as you can see, I'm from Hog Hair, Louisiana, and that is where and that's truly a little community in Louisiana, and there's, everybody knows, like, when I tell you, not only does everybody know everybody there, everybody's kin to everybody there. So, like, it's like one of those places where if you go down the road, it's like, oh, there's Arthur's truck. You know that's Arthur's truck because everybody just knows. And so we knew, but my mom played the role of, you know, well, we don't let our secrets out. You know, everything's on the inside. But, you know, everybody knows what's going on because Arthur's truck's in the ditch, you know. Or worse, Martha is running behind Arthur with the butcher knife in the front yard, you know. But don't let our secrets out, you know. Don't tell our secrets. And so that was for my memories. And I have, you know, and isn't it funny when we come in here? You know, it took me a long time to remember some good things in my childhood, and there was some good things in my childhood, and it's just, you know, I come in here and all I could remember was the bad, but those are some very vivid memories, man. And another one of those was when the screaming was going on, what I would try to do is, you know, I'm not here and this is not happening, you know, and I can do that today when I'm in those situations. I can revert back to that, and I would get up under, it was, you know, the beds up off the floor kind of things with the like iron bedsteads is what you call them, and I would get up under that bedstead, and, you know, nothing was happening to me, but I felt like it was happening to me. It was just all this screaming going on, and I would get under the bed, and I would cover my ears, and you know, and I'd open them every once in a while, and I'd see if she was still screaming, and I would cover my ears. So at around 8 or 9, the disease of alcoholism took my daddy to where the disease of alcoholism takes you, and he had some strokes and you know, just a lot of different medical issues as a, you know, a direct result. And he was left basically an invalid for about 10 years. And my role in that is, and you know, I tell you that to tell you that then my life kind of changed. There wasn't as much screaming going on, but there was a lot of caretaking going on. And that became, you know, my mom was already that, being a good unrecovered Al-Anon. She was very good at caretaking and trying to make people do what they needed to do. And I kind of took on a caretaking role. And you know, I didn't even think that was a big deal when I got here, y'all. My sponsor had to point out to me that wasn't a normal childhood, Mitzi. She said it wasn't normal to have to take care of your dad at the age of 8, 9, 10, and 11 and the ways that you had to take care of your dad. That wasn't normal, and you had that was an experience that not all children go through, and that I had to kind of work through that, you know, and that it had in some ways affected me. It did not make me alcoholic. Did not have anything to do with the fact that I was alcoholic. But it did affect me, and it affected the ways that I would grow up and the relationships I would have with other people, particularly men. So that went on for from ages 8 to 18. And you know, again, alcohol had not been introduced to me at this point. I not to my knowledge or that I remember, maybe a sip of daddy's or something around when I was 8, but nothing where I felt anything. From 8 to 18, and during that time, what I used to make me okay was food, and I used that to the point of complete destruction for me. And I had to take some drastic measures at the age of 15. I didn't have to; I wanted to. I'll say that food took me to a place that the same place this disease does. It took me to the place where I just, you know, I told my mom, please let me have the surgery, because I'd rather have the surgery and die of the surgery in 10 years than live the way I'm living. And I'll stop at that. But that is, you know, that's where that disease took me. And I still have that disease today. The surgery didn't take it away, but I am still living today, and I'm very glad that I am. Food really ruled my life in the midst of all this. I had to stay home a lot because she worked the night shift and I was caretaker for daddy. And so that set up my role. It was really, you know, when I got, you know, the one thing I never wanted to be when I grew up was like my mom or like my dad. You know, it was like, I don't want to be anything but like them, you know. And so at 18, well, actually, before I was 18, at 16 years old, I did the next thing, you know, when the food deal was kind of taken away in a sense. I started getting some, like, attention and stuff, and I'd never had that before. And it felt good, you know. Still feels good today, you know, but it felt good, you know. And I started dating a guy, and I do what, I don't know if everybody does it, but I do what I do, and you start dating them, well, I mean, you're going to marry them, right? Or you're going to, like, get hooked up with them and start living with them. And so at 16 years old, I moved out of the house, and I moved across the street. And I moved in with this guy who I thought was the love of my life, you know. Can't live without him, you know. Isn't that the story? You know, I could never live without him. Couldn't imagine being without him. And I know today I did that to kind of escape some of the home stuff. But so I moved in, and that lasted a year or so. And my dad passed away at when I was 18. Going back a little bit, when I started dating this guy, the first drink that I can, you know, remember taking was our first date. And Hog Hair, where I live, or not too far from Hog Hair, there's a levee, you know, the levee. Everybody goes to the levee and hangs out. So we were hanging out at the levee. And he bought a 12 or 24 pack Bud Light ponies. And what I remember about that night is as did the same thing that happened just about every time I drank after that, is I drank a lot of those, and I drank more than he did. And he was very amazed at that I was 16 years old and I could drink that much. I was amazed, too, because I'd never done it before. You know, it was awesome. It was awesome. And I lost my sobriety that night, and I lost some other things that night, too. So there you go. I mean, I can stop there. You know, I mean, I lost a lot of things that night. And you know, and then you're in love because, you know, you've lost a lot of things. And so then you're in love and you got to be in love. And so then you got to move in together. I mean, that's just the way I think, y'all. That's just the way I think. It, you know, made perfect sense in my mind. So we hooked up and lived together for a little while, and my dad passed away during that relationship, and you know, that sounds real sad, but I'll tell you, when that happened, it was relief to me, because in my mind, and this is my selfishness and self-centeredness, but in my mind, it was just a relief. You know, it was just a relief, and I had so much guilt about that when I got here because I never grieved that. I never, you know, it was just like, let's move on. Let's go on to the next thing. Let's go on to the next thing. And that's, you know, that's what I did. And we went on to the next thing. And for me, what I do is I go on to the next guy. This one stops working. This one's not doing enough for me. It's always about what they're not doing for me. Always about what they're not doing for me. And if I'm not careful, even today in sobriety and in the middle of this deal, my head will say, well, what's he doing for you, Mitzi? What is he doing for you today? You know? So we split ways and parted ways and I moved in with the next guy. I mean, you know, that other thing happened. I went out, you know, I went to my first bar finally. And you know, I say from 16 to 18, you know, my story's not that I constantly drank nonstop. I drank every chance I got. You know, I drank every chance I got. And then I started really doing the nightlife. You know, we started on Thursday and we would go to Saturday. And I drank from Thursday to Saturday. And sometimes on Sunday if I could get it. But we moved in with the next guy and I did all those same things. It's the same story. You know, it's the same story. And I partied and I partied and I partied. And then I moved in with the next guy, you know, because that guy decided that, well, he decided he just couldn't even handle me, basically, I think's what happened. But I know that today, you know. So I moved on And there's those particular relationships that God sometimes using my bad choices to move me along. And I had been through, this was, you know, I'm at one, two, back to the old one, to the new, to another one. So I'm at four now, at number four, called the poor guy number four. And so poor guy number four, we're just crazy, or I'm just crazy. You know, I mean, I had these interesting ways of, you know, what's a good guy? I had no idea what a great guy was. I just didn't know. And I was through a series of circumstances, I got fired from my job. And that, you know, didn't have anything to do with drinking or, you know, coming in late or calling my boyfriend long distance on the company phone and stuff. Didn't have anything to do with that. I mean, it was all their fault. Y'all don't understand. I mean, I was a hard worker. And so I got fired and I was working at this convenience store and this guy come in one day and he had a business card, like with his name on it. I mean, that's cool. Like, you're important if you have a business card. And so he had a business card with his name on it, and he bought a fifth of 8-year-old charter every day when he came in, and a Coke, and one Coke and the fifth. And he was hot. He was hot. So he met all my requirements. He drank. He was hot. And he had a business card. And later into that relationship, I found out that he had just gotten out of prison and his dad had had those made for him because his dad was letting him use his tractor or something. I don't know. But anyway, that's what happened with that deal. But, you know, what happened in this relationship is it was very much like the relationship I had grown up in. It was very chaotic. And it was so chaotic that I couldn't even remember when I got here. I couldn't even remember how long we dated because it felt like eternity, and then it felt real short. All of a sudden, it was just confusing. I didn't even know. And what happened in with that deal is we drank a lot, and then I decided that he just didn't know how to drink, and so I was going to stop drinking and try to help him understand how to drink, so that we could drink together. Because every time we would go out and party, I want to party. I want to dance. I want to have a good time. I want to stay until the bar closes. And then I want to go to the bar after the bar, like the late, late bar. And, you know, that bar where you're like literally, you know, I was always like, I'm the prettiest one here, for sure. For sure. I can for sure find me a man here, you know. And so that was, you know, what I wanted to do. But when we would go, he would always get in a fight and he would mess it all up every time. He would mess it up every time. So I was like, I'm going to stop drinking so that you can learn how to drink and I'm going to help you. And so I flipped a coin, you know, instead of doing the drinking thing, I flipped the coin for a period of time and I didn't drink. I just tried to teach him how to drink and make him understand that he would just have one or two. And I'm sure if there's Al-Anons in the room, and I know Miss Ann is here, I'll stop just a minute. I went in the bathroom a while ago in the corner, and I was praying, and Miss Ann came in, and I think she probably thinks I'm nuts because I was like, will you pray with me? And she was like, absolutely. So anyway, I appreciate it. But you know what I'm saying? I started doing that deal. I started trying to, you know, it was crazy. It was crazy. He was hiding bottles under, you know, it's like, you know, I'm not like this. I'm not like him. And there was bottles hidden up under the garbage can liner, and I went into the washing machine one day, and there was bottles hid all in the washing machine, and I was like, something is wrong with this dude. He is bad. He is bad off. And so we rocked along, and we lived together for a while, and then we went and lived together, and then we'd live together, and then, you know, and then he would find somebody else that liked him more, and we'd get back together, and if you're an alcoholic like me and you do what I do, you understand that story because that's what we did. And I still today not real sure how long we were together, but I finally, you know, broke free or however you want to call it. I think he may have maybe he got institutionalized somewhere in here and I broke free for a period of time and I was like, okay, I'm free. You know, I'm free. He's the problem. He's the problem, right? And I started drinking again. I mean, I don't have him to worry about anymore, you know? I mean, he's the problem. And I started drinking again, and that's, you know, for me, if there's that line, I don't know when I crossed the line, you know? I'm more of the belief that I've been exactly what I am today since the day I got here. And as far back as I can remember, I've always thought the way I think. There wasn't a time where I, you know, just accepted grace and stuff. There wasn't a time before that I did that. And so I started drinking and I started partying and I started doing all the stuff that I've already talked about, you know. I started, being with a lot of people and I started doing all the things that my mom told me was not okay. That's the bottom line. I started doing all the things that made my mom very shameful and made my mom stay up at night and worry. And I did those things. I don't know how long I did those things, but I did them for a while. And he came back in the picture at some point. And one day he called me and I said, I just can't be with you because you don't know how to drink. And you know, it just messes up everything. And he called me one day and he left me a message and most of the times I just kept delete because, you know, one message would be, I love you, I can't live without you, I have to have you in my life or I'm going to die. And the next one would be, you're the craziest, stupidest person ever. And it was just this back and forth all the time. And And for whatever reason, this day I listened to the message, and he said, "Hey," he said, I need to tell you something. I need to tell you that I've been trying to get sober since I was 16 years old, and I've had issues all my life. And there's some place for you. There's a place for you, and it's called Al-Anon. And you need to call this lady. You need to call this lady. You need to call her today. And her name is Miss Pat. And he left this number. And you know, I know why today. I have no idea why I chose to do anything he asked me to do or suggested that I do, but I called that lady, and she said Sunday night at 8 o'clock there's a meeting at WeCare on Stubbs Avenue, and I didn't know where Stubbs was, and but I found it, and I went there, and you know, I don't necessarily know that I went there and thought, oh my God, this is what I needed my whole life. But I went there, and there was this Miss Linda, and Miss Linda's about this tall, and she, when she hugs you, it's like this, and it's a bear hug. And she was there, and I don't know what they said, but I truly felt for the first time in my life, and I mean that, like good, like it's okay. It is okay. This is okay. Everything's going to be okay. And so I went to Al-Anon for a while, and we kind of tried to date for a while and continue to date. And I went for a while, and I heard a lot of things in there, but I just wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready, so I took a little sabbatical from there. And I went and drank. I went and drank again, you know. And I drank for a while, and he disappeared again. And somewhere along the way, I ended up back in the rooms of Al-Anon. And I said I have a array of things in my life. This is just part of my story. And I ended up back in Al-Anon. And I asked that Miss Linda lady to sponsor me. And she took me through the 12 steps of Al-Anon, which are, you know, we know are our steps. And I got a lot of freedom. And I found out in that, you know, I am the adult child of an alcoholic, and I have no idea how to react to life, y'all. No idea. And you know, we went to conventions. I was always doing something, and I met all these cool AA people. I loved hanging out with the AA people. They were awesome. I mean, they thought like I did. I mean, the Al-Anons thought like I did, but I was a little more out there. And so I loved hanging out with y'all at AA meetings and stuff. And I would ask her, I would say, "Can I go to the big book study on the AA side tonight?" And she said, "As long as you sit on the front row and don't look at any guys in the eye." I said, "Yes, ma'am. I won't do that. I won't look at any guy. I'll just look at Mr. Eugene," who was like 107. "So I'll just look at Mr. Eugene, and I promise I won't look at any guys." And so I didn't for a while. And so I didn't, but I kept going to Al-Anon, and I was, you know, I was little Miss Al-Anon. I was on the wings of Miss Linda, and I moved in with her, and I told her I was going to move in for a couple of weeks until I could find an apartment, and 3 years later, I moved out, and it was a neat, very neat experience, and if you've lived with people in the program, you learn how to work the traditions in your life. And in your house or in your home, and so we worked the traditions in that home, like I say, somewhere along the way of that, we were at the Monroe Convention, and I was doing what they told me to do. I was doing service work, and I had gone to get the barbecue or something, and there was a 10 o'clock speaker that morning, but I didn't have time to listen to the 10 o'clock speaker because y'all told me that I needed to do service work. So I was helping with the food and the hospitality, and I was having a good time. And after the 10 o'clock speaker, it was like, you know, all these women in Al-Anon and these, you know, we call them double winners. I don't know if y'all have double winners here, but those are AA Al-Anon people. Double winners where I come from. And they were just on and on about this 10 o'clock speaker. And I was like, "What big deal? What was the deal? Oh, he was really good. You're gonna have to meet him, Mitzi." And this was my Al-Anon sponsor. "You're gonna have to meet him. He was just great." And so at the 13 step dance that night, this guy came up to me and asked me to dance, and I said yes. And, you know, he's all right. He's all right. I'll dance with him. And he came up and asked me to dance, and as we're dancing, he's telling me all kinds of stuff about me. I was like, how do you know that? He said, there's this big, tall lady, and she was telling me all kinds of stuff about you. I said, that's my online sponsor. Well, what I know today, she's trying to hook us up. And it worked. And we've been together since sometime in June of 2000. And that's a whole nother hour. So, Lord have mercy. You really want to know how selfish you are? Get married in the program. You know, you really want to know how self-centered you can be? Get married. And you know, bless his heart, marry an adult child who's a basically only child / baby almost, and had worked some steps, but had only been working those for a couple years. You know, hook up with somebody like me. Good Lord. He's a trooper. So anyway, we met and started dating and we got married in this deal. And we got married, me as an Al-Anon and him with 12 years of sobriety, I guess, at the time or something like that. And we got married the April of the following year, on April the 9th of 2001. And still doing the deal. You know, we're going to meetings. I'm going to my little Al-Anon meetings, and he's going to AA. And we were standing. I had become very miserable because I'm going to tell y'all something. This married deal was not what I thought it was going to be. Just in 2 months, it was very different than what I thought. I just wasn't getting what I want, to be honest with you. He just wasn't acting right. He was just not acting right. Like, he wasn't doing all those things that I had imagined in my head that he was going to do when we got married and all this stuff. I was just very miserable. And I can remember driving up to our house one day, and I can remember thinking this. I didn't think I'll leave or I'll do this or I'll do that. I remember thinking a strawberry daiquiri would be the best thing for me right now. I don't even drink strawberry. That wasn't even my drink of choice. But it was just that, and it was that, all that thought process of, man, alcohol would just, something to drink would make me feel so good right now, because I was very miserable and he wasn't living up to my expectations and, you know, just all this stuff. But like I say, we were still kind of, you know, doing the deal. And we were standing in the kitchen one night, or I was standing in the kitchen, and we were listening to Sandy from Little Rock, Arkansas, and Sandy was sharing her story, and her story was that, you know, she was an Al-Anon, and all of a sudden, somewhere through the way, you know, she found herself sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked at Mike, and I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And he said, don't talk to me, call somebody else. I said, who do I call? He said, I don't know. And so I said, well, I'm going to call Mary Helen. And he said, okay. And so I called Mary Helen, and I got his sponsor, Bill, on the phone that day. Mary Helen was out of town. And you know, I'd been around these rooms for a while, and I had no idea that there was a ladies' meeting on Saturday at 1. And I don't know if that was the next day or whatever, but he said, you know, Mitzi, you're going to go to this lady. Won't you try going to this ladies' meeting? So I did, and I sat in that room that morning, and it was a circle, and we went around the room, and it got to me, and I said, I'm Mitzi, and I don't know what I am, and Miss Sandy said, she says she didn't say this, but I know she did. She says, oh, baby, it's okay. We know. And I said, okay. So, and at the end of that meeting that day, I said, my name is Mitzi. I'm an alcoholic. And I picked up this hardship. And my life has truly never been the same since that day. In more ways than one. I picked up Desire Chip, and you know, it was just like, I knew a lot of the people there. I just moved over. You know, I just moved over. And And I asked Mary Helen to sponsor me, and Mary Helen's still my sponsor today. I haven't found it necessary to get a new sponsor. Sometimes you have to do that in here. But when I call her, she still tells me what it is I need to hear today. When I call her, I talked to her earlier today, and I said, Mary Helen, I don't know why I'm here in Myrtle Beach. I said, I just feel like I don't even have anything to share. And she said, you're right where you're supposed to be, Mitzi. You're exactly where you're supposed to be tonight, doing exactly what you're supposed to do. And I am. You know, I know that I am. And I'll feel it more when I'm finished. But I know that this deal's not by mistake. God has worked everything out for me perfectly in here. And you know, so I just moved to the other side and I started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are the same steps, but there was some more depth that I got into in there with my drinking. And I just kept doing the same things I was doing, going to conventions, doing service work, doing whatever was asked of me. Mike and I, rocked along, and we were married our first year, and the first year of marriage is tough. I don't care if you're in AA, you're out of AA, you got the 12 steps, you don't. It's tough. It's tough. It was a tough year, and we made it through that, and we did a lot of stuff together, and we both have grown up in this program. We both have truly grown up in this program. I don't know any other way to live, y'all. I mean, I do, but I don't want to do that. You know, I don't want to live that way. This is the only way I know to live. And even today, even when I get just a little bit of that stuff going on inside me, I call my sponsor because I don't like that feeling anymore. I lived with that my entire childhood. And I lived with that until I came in here. And I don't like that feeling. I just don't like it. So I just don't know any other way to live. And we did the deal and continued doing the deal. And I guess we were married about 4 or 5 years, and I mean, you get pregnant and have a baby, you know, and that's just what you do, and so we did that, you know. I think he says I told him that it was time, and he thought he was gonna have a lot of time to practice, and he didn't. One practice is all it took, and 9 months later. Here comes this little girl, and I have no idea what to do with this little girl. And I tell y'all, y'all have taught me everything I know, not just how to be sober. Y'all have taught me how to be a mom in here. Y'all have taught me how to be a sister, a daughter, a friend. Y'all taught me how to dress, for God's sake. I can tell you, when I got here, wearing a skirt to the podium was not something I had planned. You know, that was not in my deal. I had camel toe cowboy boots, cowboy jeans on, and my Roper boots. And I thought I was hot, you know? I mean, I thought I looked good with my camel toes on. And it's the best ones were the ones that you had to lay down on the bed and get the hanger and try to zip them up. I mean, y'all ever done that? Try to zip them up with the hanger because they're so tight. And that's what I did. That's the way I was when I came in here. And so anyway, you know, y'all have truly taught me everything that I know about being anything in here. And so we had this little girl, and it was so funny. You know, I don't think I've ever shared this, but it was so funny. The first night we got home, and Mike is like extremely OCD. So he's like, you know, he's got it all organized—the diaper and the wet ones and the da-da-da-da-da-da-da—and I've got her, and we're in there, and like if she goes, we're there, and we're like on top of her, and like we're changing her, and I'm doing this, and he's doing that, and later after a year or so, he said, you know, it was like a, you know, like in the Talladega or whatever, you know, the pit changing crew. It's like we were like a pit changing crew. We were just like doom, 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 doom. And it was done, and we were doing this deal, anyway, it was what it was, but like I say, and there was, you know, there's so much fear, I don't know, but for me, you know, all that came up, it was like, how do I be a mama? I can't do this, and, you know, I do what I always do. I call my sponsor, and I go to a meeting, and I just do the next best thing that I see somebody else do, or that my sponsor suggests. That's all I know to do, and you know, we were married. I mean, she was about 18 months old, And, you know, I shared a little bit about my mom, and like I say, you know, Polly P. talks about, you know, when she brings her sponsees in to do step work, she says, you know, I just bring them to the house, and I, this is probably not exactly how she said it, but this is what I heard, and that's what's important. But she says, you know, I bring them to my house, and I sit them on my table, and I say, just start with Mama. And that was me. I just needed to start on that list with Mama. And because, you know, I just, you know, I couldn't see. I just could not see any good. I couldn't see that she loved me. I couldn't see any of that stuff. All I heard was that screaming and that whatever. And you know, I got through that inventory and started looking at the amends. And I looked at my sponsor and I said, what I owe her amends for? And she looked at me in the eyes. She said, because you're a brat. And she said, you're going to be the very best daughter you can be. I said, I don't know how to do that. I don't know if I'm willing. And she said, you're willing. And she said, here's how you're going to start. You're going to call her once every week. And you're going to go see her a couple times a month. It's like, I don't know if I'm willing. She said, you will. You'll be willing. Or you'll get in pain and you'll become willing, one or another. So I called her once a week and I listened to her. And I did that until it felt comfortable. And, you know, I can remember when we lived at the time, you know, it was like a 40-minute drive to see her. And when I first started going down here, it was all this, you know, I've got to pray myself up. You know, I've got to pray and go. And all this deal. And somewhere along the way, I wasn't praying anymore. I was looking forward to going and seeing her. You know, wow. What a deal. I was going more than she told me I had to go, you know. And I could hear the wisdom. I could hear. You know, it's truly never been the people in my life that was a problem. It's what's right here. I just don't perceive things the way other people do. And, you know, people just don't treat me right. And so, you know, that relationship started mending, and you know, I don't know that she necessarily knew it was broken, but I had all that stuff going on, and you know, I just kept doing what was suggested. That's the only thing I can tell. If you're here new tonight, just take the suggestion. I mean, it ain't gonna kill you. Just take the suggestion, you know. So I did that, and when Eliza, our daughter, was about 18 months old, Mike's grandmother called us and said, "Hey, she was 90." And she said, I'm going in the nursing home. Why don't y'all sell your house and move in my house so y'all can live rent free, you know, live for free. And, you know, and like most alcoholics, and I can only speak for myself, you know, we're not all good with money. And I can promise you that that's on my defect list, if it's a defect. You know, I'm not perfect in that area. And it was like, well, you know, we could use the extra money. That'd be pretty cool. And so we were all for that, and I made some homemade for sale signs, and I put them in the front yard of our little subdivision. I had the ones that were going to go at the end of the road, like at the main entrance, and somebody came by and looked at our house and made us an offer, like within 5 days of us putting them in the front yard, it made us an offer $500 less than what I had priced it at and was ready to move in. And I was like, okay, so we called Mike's grandmother and said, you know, we're coming. The house is, contract's on the house. And so we were going up that Saturday to move and we move her stuff out to start, you know, getting it organized. And we got up there, and his mom was sitting on the back of the truck, and she said, don't go in there. She's crazy. Mike's like, what is it? She's like, she's crazy. She's crazy. She's changed her mind. Y'all can't come move in. And you know, we've got this 18 month old, and Mike's like, I'm going in. and he did, and I stayed in the truck, and from what I understand that day, she was sitting at the table, and what she said to him was, God told me not to let y'all live here. And he said, you are crazy. God didn't tell you that. And she said, yeah, God told me not to let y'all live here. Y'all can't live here. I'm packing everything up, and we're going to sell the house. And we left there that day, and we had nowhere to go. We had we couldn't get out of the contract. I mean, I guess we could have, but it didn't make sense. We couldn't rent an apartment for what we were paying on that house, because it was a really cheap monthly note. And we didn't know what we were going to do. And, I mean, we were racking our brains. I thought I was going to have to move back in with that Al-Anon sponsor. And I called her, and she didn't just openly invite us back. So I was like, what are we going to do? And my brother, who is, you know, probably part of the story I won't get to, but I called my brother, and the only person I knew that had anything empty was my brother had this Drafty Shack trailer. That was the nickname for it, the Drafty Shack. And that's because it was drafty. Had some holes in areas of it. And I said, is that guy still living in your trailer? We don't have a place to live. And he said, no. He said, he's not staying there anymore. And I said, I don't know what to do right now. Can we rent it for, we need a place to live in like a week, 7 days, 9 days, something. And he said, yeah, come on. And that place was you know, from here to right outside the door out there from my mom's house. And where I grew up at, and we moved into that trailer, and we it was interesting, it was fun, but interesting. It was different. We were driving a lot further to work, and you know, I couldn't see anything but the bad in it. I couldn't understand, you know, what is the deal? You know, what is the deal? You know, I'm doing everything right. I'm going to meetings. I'm working with my sponsor. You know, why am I back in the place that I said? The truth was, I said I'd never move back to Hog Hair. I'm never living in Hog Hair again. I grew up there. There's nothing to do there. I'm kin to everybody there. Everybody knows my business. I'm not moving back there. And so I end up, and we're right up the street, and you know, I got to see my mom a lot. I got to see her daily, pretty much. And I really got to see her daily when we, you know, we were there a while, and we enjoyed being around family. My sister and one of my brothers is there, and we got to see them a lot, and it was just neat. My perception had changed of my family. They just were not that bad of folks. And they really loved me a lot. I mean, go figure. I mean, I don't know how that happened, but you know, they really loved me a lot, and I enjoyed it. I was enjoying being able to see my mom. I had, you know, hadn't lived there in 10 or 11 years, and I was enjoying doing that. And we would spend time together, and she would spend time with my daughter, who, like I say, at the time was 18 months old. And you know, my mom did not understand this whole deal here. She did not, because I was living away, thank goodness she didn't see some of the places my alcoholism took me to. She's seen enough, but she didn't see some of the things that I'm very grateful that she didn't. But anyway, so we're rocking along, and we're visiting mama, and we're working, and we're doing the deal, and we're wondering why we're in the Drafty Shack. And we decided to upgrade from the Drafty Shack to another trailer. So we upgraded to another trailer, and we moved it right across the street from my mom, on some of her land. And we, you know, I'm enjoying it. I'm loving living out there. I mean, our daughter's outside, and I don't know, it's the country, and it's just, I mean, perception again. And it was awesome. And so Mike was here in 2007, in September of 2007. And on July the 22nd of 2007, I did what I'd been doing for several months. Me and Eliza went across the street, and we were sitting in the swing outside with my mom, and we were chit-chatting and, you know, just talking and visiting. And as we were sitting there, my mom went inside for a little while, and she'd had a history of some high blood pressure, cholesterol, some heart issues, and she went inside and she came back out and sat down, and she said, you know, sometimes when I'm feeling like that heart thing, you know, like when it's pulling my heart like this, Mitzi, she said, you see that vein right there? It gets really big. And I looked at it, and it was huge. And by the time I looked at it and I stood up to walk to her, she had a massive heart attack, and she was gone, just like that. Just like that, she was gone. But if you will remember Mike's grandmother saying, God told me not to let you move here. And I believe today God did tell her that. Because I got to spend 6 months, daily almost, with my mom. And I got to be the best daughter I could be. And I had no guilt. I had no guilt. And that is only because of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I promise you, you don't get that out on the street. You do not get that anywhere else. I was able to spend that time with this woman that I didn't even think loved me. And I was able to see that she loved me a whole hell of a lot. And, you know, I don't know what God's plan is. Miss Linda, my Al-Anon sponsor, told me this when I was living with her. She said, you know, Mitzi, she said, and this, it made so much sense to me. I have to have simple things. She said, you know, Mitzi, she said, this God deal, it's like a quilt. And she said, you know what a quilt, like those, no, older ladies, like the quilts older ladies make? She said, you know, they use all these scraps, like told all these different scraps. And if you ever look at all these scraps in a bag, you look at them and you're like, some of those are ugly. I wouldn't put them on anybody's quilt. But she said, you know, you take all these different pieces of quilt and they start sewing them together or whatever you do with a quilt, because I don't know how to sew, but I guess you sew it or whatever. And she said, you know, they take ugly pieces and they take pretty pieces and they take pieces from this and pieces from that. And she said, and you know, when you open that quilt up and you lay it out, it's beautiful. I've never seen any quilt that was just ugly, ever, ever. And she said, that's the way our life is. She said, there's going to be some ugly pieces in there that you would not want to do over again, but there's going to be some real beautiful pieces. She said, but when it's all said and done and you lay it out, it's beautiful. And that's what God's given me today. He's given me a beautiful life. It's got some ugly pieces in it. And I'll tell you that if alcohol would have taken away the pain that I had that day when my mom died, I would have drank. But I've been around here long enough to know that alcohol is not going to take away the pain of anything that I go through. It's just not going to do it. It's not going to take away the pain anymore. Like I say, it was just, I'll never figure God out. I'll never figure God out. I don't want to. He's always got surprises in store for me, but it was a great experience to be able to be the best daughter I could be. Got just a few more minutes. I'll just try to share with you, you know, what today is like. You know, I've been employed at a job for 13 years. You know, I may quit tomorrow. But right now, you know, I'm employed at a job and I show up for work when I'm supposed to show up for work and I do what I'm supposed to do and I haven't been fired and I don't make long distance phone calls to boyfriends. I'm married 12 years today. This year I celebrated 12 years of sobriety and 12 years of marriage. And that, my friend, is a miracle of this program. I can, both of them. I don't know which one is the most. After my mom died, you know, a lot of things happen in death, and I had a bottom spiritually there for a little while, and Mike and I got to a real dark place, and he didn't mind me sharing this, and if it helps you, great. If not, you know, maybe I just need to share it. But we got to a real dark place, and in the book where it talks about sometimes we seek outside help, well, we sought outside help. And I got to really go back and look at how some of my adult child stuff was really affecting our marriage. And the way I was, I'm not saying my parents' fault, the way I was reacting to life and the way I was reacting to him and the way I was reacting to everything. And you know, I was saying, you know, he would say, you know, one thing and I'd say, well, that's fine. I hate you. I just want a divorce. That's my solution. That was my solution with all those relationships, you know. I just want a divorce. I just want to leave. And I caused a lot of pain by doing that. And I had caused a lot of pain, and it took a while to heal that. You know, I get up every morning and I ask God to, God, please put somebody in front of me to help today, because if you do not put somebody in front of me to help, I'm going to think about me all day. And it's not going to be good. And I ask him to help me be the best mom I can be, and I ask him to help me be the best wife I can be. And I can tell you that this morning at 3 o'clock, I wasn't the best wife I could be. It was early, And we had a flight out at 6, and I said we was leaving at 4:20, and if I say we're leaving at 4:20, we're leaving at 4:20, not a minute before. So don't rush me. And he had an attitude. And so we got in the car, and I will try not to, I'm not going to curse, but I called him a word that started with a D and ended with the word head. And he kind of was being one, in my opinion. I mean, I didn't have any witnesses to, you know, but that's just kind of the way I felt about it. But I'm not perfect today. And, you know, the only thing I could tell you today is that I would still be justifying my actions of that this morning. Right now, standing at this podium, I'd still be saying, I'm not. And I've made those amends. We have a rule when we go on vacations or trips, one domestic squabble per day. And we had it at 4:00 this morning. And we're good. But no, I mean we've been through a lot in here, and you know, if I get up and ask God to help me be the best wife I can be, I do okay. And if I don't do okay. I don't know. This deal's just awesome. This deal's just awesome. I don't know what else I can tell you except that I truly, when I tell you I don't want to be anywhere else, doing anything else with anybody else, I do not. That's the truth. I haven't always felt that way. I was really mad about being an alcoholic. You know, I shared the other day in a meeting, I think I finally made it to the point where I get to come to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to come. And if you're still here and you're saying, I have to come, that's okay. Keep saying it. But if you come long enough, you'll get to a place where you can say, I get to come to the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group, I have the most awesome home group as far as I'm concerned. I can't ask for a better group of people. And I'm going to end with this. When we were down in Gonzales and Jay was with us, he spoke there, and they gave him the manuscript, the big book manuscript. And if you haven't got it, it's awesome. It's where they, you know, did the editing and everything, and it's an awesome book. And they gave him that as for being the speaker. And we were picking him up the next morning, and he was out there getting his last drag because he knew I didn't smoke, and you know, he didn't want to disrespect us by smoking in the car. And he had that bag in his hand, and he got in the car and he threw it in the back seat at me, and and he had a note in it, and I'm going to read this note. And he says, Dear Mike and Mitzi, you are the future of AA. That being said, I thank you for your friendship. The book is only to continue to remind you of where we have came from. It is much better for the future to have this than the past. Thank you for everything. And I just hope that I can give back this much, just this much of what JP has given, plumb back. He's gone now, we could say it. What Jay has given to this fellowship and to this program. If I can just give back this much. That's all I want to do. And if you're new here, just keep coming back. It does get better, but sometimes the quilt has some ugly pieces in it. But together, we are a WE program. Together, we make it through it. I've seen people make it through a lot worse than I've been through in here, sober. Thank you so much for asking me to be here. I can say thank you now because it's over. Thank you so much. Thank you for the group.
Thank you.